You look up at a simple light bulb in your living room, or you step outside and just look at the night sky.
Right.
And you generally think of light as a tool.
Yeah.
It illuminates things. It reveals the chair, the trees, the ground you're walking on.
Yeah, it's just the thing that lets us see the world.
Exactly. But what if that light isn't just revealing the material world around you? What if it is the literal physical fabric constructing it?
It's a pretty massive paradigm shift.
It really is. And that's our mission for this deep dive. We are pulling from some fascinating excerpts from the book Supermatter, illustrated by Praveer Malik, PhD, alongside these really incredible conceptual illustrations by Narendra Joshi, PhD.
Yeah, their work together is really visually and conceptually striking.
It is, and we're using it to explore this framework where absolutely everything, matter, time, space, gravity, is fundamentally made of light.
Which I think is going to completely change how you look at reality by the end of this conversation.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, let's unpack this. Where is the logical starting point for constructing a physical, tangible universe entirely out of photons?
Well, the foundational constraint making physical reality possible is actually a speed limit. The whole theory hinges on the fact that light in a vacuum travels at sea.
Right, the famous 186,000 miles per second.
Exactly. Because that speed is finite rather than infinite, you and I exist in a material form. When light moves at a capped velocity, it experiences basically a delay getting from point A to point B.
A lag, almost.
Right, a lag. And the book argues that this minute fraction of time it takes for light to travel across even a microscopic space is the window where energy accumulates. It bundles together and forms what physics calls quanta.
So if the speed is capped, the energy kind of has to bottleneck.
Yes, exactly that.
The text uses a rushing stream of water as an analogy, but I picture this more like a computer rendering a complex simulation.
Oh, that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, like if a processor operates with zero latency, so basically infinite speed, every object, every landscape exists simultaneously as pure code. It's everywhere at once, but you can't touch it.
Right, there's no physical boundary.
But if you throttle the processor, if you cap the frame rate, suddenly that code has to render sequentially. It draws boundaries, you get solid walls, collision mechanics, physics.
The rendering analogy perfectly captures the mechanics of that transition. Without that latency, potential matter disperses instantly. It is the slowing down that creates the boundary conditions for mass.
It's just wild to think about.
It is. And that finite speed doesn't just render physical matter. It fundamentally engineers the architecture of time itself.
Wait, time too? How does that work?
Consider the standard 8-minute journey of a photon traveling from the sun to the Earth.
Okay, I'm with you.
If you are somehow riding alongside that photon and you pause your journey exactly at minute 4, your perception of time is dictated entirely by that travel delay.
Oh, I see. Looking back down the path you just traveled, you are seeing 4 minutes into the past, back toward the sun.
Exactly. And looking ahead toward the Earth, you are looking 4 minutes into the future.
So the present moment is just the localized pause
Yeah.
in that finite journey. I mean, time itself is literally just a byproduct of C.
Yeah, the past, present, and future are structurally dependent on that 186,000 miles per second. Without the delay, everything happens simultaneously.
But hold on, the text points out that light's velocity isn't an absolute constant in all environments, right? I mean, it slows down when moving through denser mediums, like water or glass.
It does, yes.
So if the specific finite speed of light in a vacuum is what structures our atoms and our experience of time, does the author argue that altering that foundational speed limit would rewrite the fundamental laws of physics?
Actually, yes. The logic of the framework demands exactly that. The speed dictates the reality.
Wow.
If the universal baseline for light suddenly dropped to, say, a fraction of c, the delay in energy transmission would widen. The accumulation of quanta would change.
Meaning the atomic structure would shift.
Completely. The atomic structure, the binding energies, and the flow of time would completely alter. We wouldn't just be moving slower. The material expression of the universe would be an entirely different density of reality.
Here is where it gets really interesting. Because if capping the speed of light creates bounded matter and linear time, the necessary counter question is, what happens if we remove the cap entirely?
Yeah, what does that look like?
Yeah, what does a universe look like if light travels at infinite speed?
Well, this is where we shift from quantum mechanics into this profound philosophical geometry. If light travels infinitely fast, it instantly occupies any volume it enters.
Zero travel time.
Zero. If you looked up at the night sky in that universe, you wouldn't see isolated stars against a black void.
Because the light doesn't take years to reach us.
Exactly. Because every photon from every star reaches every point in space instantaneously. The universe becomes a blinding, brilliant, unbroken white canvas.
The text calls this existing in a sea of light.
Yes, the sea of light.
And a sea of infinite light carries very specific implications, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The author breaks this down into four ultimate traits, the four omnis.
Right.
If light is instantly everywhere, it is automatically omnipresent. And because it saturates all space instantly,
yeah,
it leaves no room for any competing force to arise that isn't also light. It dictates all action, making it omnipotent.
And the third trait follows logically from there, which is omniscience.
How so?
Well, if a medium instantly occupies all space and governs all forces, it possesses a simultaneous real-time integration of all data within that space.
So it's basically an ultimate information network.
Precisely. It inherently knows the state of everything because it is everything everywhere at once.
That's a lot to wrap your head around.
It is. And finally, because it acts as the instantaneous connective tissue holding every coordinate of that infinite space together, it is omni-nurturing. It sustains the entire system in perfect equilibrium.
Okay, but what I need to understand is how the author maps these theoretical infinite omnis onto the dense, messy reality we actually live in.
Right, the practical application.
Yeah, how do omniscience and omnipresence translate into a universe capped at sea?
What's fascinating here is the mechanism of compression. Dr. Malik argues that our material universe is simply a step-down, pressurized projection of those infinite traits.
So they get squeezed into our reality.
Basically. When infinite omnipresence is forced into a finite speed, it crystallizes into what he calls presence, the physical stability of matter.
Ah, so it becomes the solid stuff of the past that you can measure and touch.
Exactly. And omnipotence, when throttled down, becomes power or vitality. It is the kinetic energy, the electromagnetic forces, the active drive of the present moment.
And omniscience. Because mapping infinite cosmic knowledge onto physical atoms seems like, I don't know, a bit of a stretch.
I get that. But it translates into knowledge or mentality. Think about it systemically. In an infinite state, data integration is instant. But in a finite, slowed down state, that integration takes time.
It has to travel.
Right. It manifests as a searching process, an evolutionary drive toward complex information processing. Mentality, from the basic chemical reactivity of an amoeba all the way up to human consciousness, is just omniscience working within a speed limit.
That is incredible. And finally, omni-nurturance becomes harmony, which governs how all this matter interacts.
Exactly.
Okay, that structural mapping actually makes a lot of sense. But it demands an origin story.
It does.
How did we transition from a perfect, infinite, instantaneous sea of light to a universe restricted by a cosmic speed limit? I mean, conventional cosmology points to the Big Bang as the origin of all matter and space. Does this framework just overlay light onto the Big Bang?
It actually redefines the event entirely. The Big Bang wasn't a sudden explosion of dense matter outward into a void.
No. What was it?
In this framework, it was a massive deceleration. It was the precise phase transition where light dropped from an infinite velocity down to a finite speed. The author frames this deceleration as generating a seed equation.
So the transition from infinite to finite acts almost like a prism, fracturing those unified omnis into distinct seeds of power, presence, knowledge, and harmony.
Yes, waiting to unfold within the new boundary conditions of time and space. The text actually uses the Ouroboros, you know, an ancient symbol of the snake eating its own tail, to describe this.
Yeah, that's a cool visual.
Yeah, it implies it isn't a singular one-off explosion, but a recurring cycle of infinite light dipping into finite expression to materialize its potential and then returning. And the exact threshold where this materialization happens is governed by Planck's constant.
Right. Planck's constant H. We use it to measure the size of quanta.
We do, but in this theory, its role is deeply structural. Planck's constant acts as the mathematical floor of reality.
The floor.
Yeah, it is the lower bound of action required for the infinite sea of light to bridge into material expression. Below that threshold, energy refuses to subdivide. It insists on forming discrete islands of matter.
So quanta aren't just tiny particles.
No, they are the literal doorways where decelerating light crosses the threshold into our tangible reality.
Okay, I have to challenge the physics here for a second.
Okay.
We keep talking about light decelerating from an infinite speed down to C. But Einstein's theory of special relativity tells us that C is the absolute cosmic speed limit. You require infinite energy to accelerate an object with mass to the speed of light.
That's the standard model, yes.
So how does the author justify a theory built on light dropping down from an impossible infinite speed?
Well, the text tackles this by looking closely at the mathematics of theoretical physics, specifically regarding tachyons.
Tachyons?
Yeah. Relativity forbids accelerating a standard subluminal particle past the speed of light. However, the equations do not strictly forbid the existence of particles that are already moving faster than c from the very moment of their creation.
I've heard of that loophole, yeah.
The author points to the foundational work of physicists like Alexei Myron Beleniuk and E.C. George Sudarshan back in the 1960s, and Gerald Feinberg, who actually coined the term tachyon in 1967.
But tachyons are widely regarded as mathematical artifacts, aren't they? They are a byproduct of the equation, sure, but there's no empirical evidence they physically exist. It feels a bit dangerous to build a structural theory of reality on hypothetical metaparticles.
It might seem that way, but the author links this directly to the well-documented reality of wave-particle duality.
How so?
Think about it. Why does light and matter behave as both a localized particle and a smeared-out wave? The text posits that particle-like behavior is simply the signature of moving at or below c. The localized particle is the bounded finite state.
Okay, I'm following.
Wave-like phenomena, however, where a single entity seems to occupy multiple positions simultaneously before observation, might be our constrained perspective catching a glimpse of faster-than-light tachyon-like behavior.
Wait, so the wave function isn't just a probability cloud. It is the underlying architecture of infinite light bleeding through into our finite environment.
Exactly. This raises an important question. If this dual nature is a fundamental property of reality, are our scientific instruments and our very neurological hardware, for that matter, simply blind to the infinite state?
Because we only exist in the finite state.
Right. Our tools and our brains evolved entirely within this capped environment. They are calibrated exclusively to measure subluminal reality.
So the faster-than-light domain isn't mathematically impossible. It might just be perceptually inaccessible to our current hardware.
Yes, we literally just can't see it.
Man, we are trying to measure a supersonic jet with a radar gun calibrated for a school zone.
That is a brilliant way to put it.
Okay, if we accept this premise, a universe built of quantized, decelerated light, where time is just the travel delay, we still have to explain the environment itself. Where do space and gravity fit into this?
Well, space is not an empty vacuum waiting to be filled. The text defines space as a highly active structured seeding ground.
A seeding ground for what?
It exists specifically to provide the dimensional capacity for those fractured seeds of light we talked about. The presence, power, knowledge, and harmony to grow and interact.
That reframes gravity entirely. We are taught gravity is a property of mass. Heavy objects warping the fabric of space-time. But if mass is just crystallized light, what is gravity?
Gravity is the macro expression of omninurturance, which we mapped earlier to harmony.
Oh, right.
In an infinite state, light instantly connects all points. In a finite state, that desire for connection persists, but has to operate across the delay of space. Gravity is simply the material expression of light attempting to maintain structural harmony between separated quanta.
So when mass tells space how to curve, and space tells mass how to move, you are basically watching the innate drive of light enforcing equilibrium across the cosmos.
That's exactly it.
If space is essentially a garden for these seeds of light, that offers a wildly different explanation for why the universe is expanding. Right now, astrophysics attributes cosmic expansion to dark energy. But according to this theory, why is the fabric of space stretching outward and accelerating while doing so?
The expansion is driven by a creative, almost biological imperative. The text calls it the drive for functional richness.
Functional richness.
Yeah. The universe isn't just inflating blindly. Space is expanding because it requires more capacity to sow more complex expressions of light. The infinite traits of the sea of light are so vast that our current material universe just cannot fully embody them yet.
Light's too small.
Space must expand to provide room for deeper, more intricate material combinations to emerge.
It is expanding to create room for complexity. Which brings us to the end game, really.
Well,
if the universe is driven by this need for functional richness, what is the ultimate destination?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the evolutionary trajectory of matter doesn't end with atomic structures or even biological life as we know it. The author concludes that we are moving toward what he terms supermatter.
Supermatter, what does that mean? Like denser rock?
No, this isn't just denser rock or heavier metals. Supermatter represents a physical substrate capable of holding and expressing far more of the infinite light's properties, more knowledge, more harmony, more power without breaking down. Current material reality is just the scaffolding for an unending complexification of light.
And this is exactly why you, listening to this, need to care about a theoretical physics framework. Because we aren't just sitting in the stands watching this happen.
No, we're deeply involved.
The book argues that nature has delegated the levers of this cosmic evolution directly to human beings. Look at our scale.
Okay.
We exist roughly 30 orders of magnitude larger than the quantum microcosm and about 30 orders of magnitude smaller than the cosmic macrocosm.
We're the exact midpoint. The scales of causality are converging on consciousness. For billions of years, the slowdown of light and the complexification of matter happened automatically.
Just physical laws playing out.
Exactly. But the faculties that emerged from that process, our self-awareness, our will, our capacity for profound abstract thought, are the new evolutionary tools. By mastering the quantum microcosm and understanding our own internal structures, humanity has the potential to actively restructure the macrocosm.
So we are no longer the result of evolution. We are becoming the mechanism of it.
That is the core message, yes.
So what does this all mean? If we synthesize everything from Supermatter Illustrated, the reality you inhabit is breathtakingly cohesive. The watch on your wrist, the concrete under your feet, the biological cells dividing in your bloodstream, none of it is dead, solid matter.
Not at all.
It is entirely composed of light that hit a cosmic speed limit. That deceleration forced energy to bundle into quanta, creating the boundaries of matter and the linear flow of time.
And space is the active garden designed to let those fractured seeds of infinite light grow.
Exactly. And gravity is the harmonic tension, keeping all those pieces connected across the void.
The expansion of the universe is simply the system demanding more room to build supermatter, an architecture complex enough to fully embody the infinite traits of presence, power, knowledge, and harmony.
Which leaves us with one final provocative thought. If everything is light, if matter is just the physical rendering of these energies, then our internal sensations, our urges, and our complex thoughts are also layered onto this reality.
They're part of the same system.
Right. They are, quite literally, waveforms of light. The text argues human will is the new delegated lever for cosmic evolution. So if our thoughts are made of light, what happens when we focus them collectively?
That is the ultimate question.
Could the intense, directed mental energy of humanity, our combined conscious light, be the exact physical mechanism required to trigger the quantization of the next layer of supermatter? Are we actively thinking the future universe into existence?
It's a staggering possibility.
Next time you flick on a light bulb, remember, you're not just illuminating a room. You are looking at the foundational architecture of time, space, in your own mind. Thank you for taking this deep dive with us. Keep questioning the physical reality around you.